morning, everyone, and welcome to Morning Drive on WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield's Community Radio. You may also be watching us on Pittsfield Community Television, PCTV. Welcome. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I will be your host for Morning Drive for the next about 58 minutes or so. Hopefully you can stay with us for the entire show. If you cannot, you can catch the entire interview that I'm having this morning with William Garrity Jr. by going to pittsfieldtv.org. And all the Morning Drive shows are there, so you can catch any show that you might have missed. So with me is William Garrity Jr. He is actually a member of our school committee. And I've really wanted to do this interview for some time. I've known William and his family for a long time. His family has been my constituents when I was city councilor, and I've been watching him grow, and now he's taking his place in city government. I could not be more excited about you. So good morning, William. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing fine. And the background, you have to tell our viewers who are watching on PCTV about your wonderful background.
Yeah. So I took this back in when I was a senior in high school at the Conic. This was just off my cell phone out of one of the windows in the building, but it looks really nice. So I decided to use this in my background today.
Well, I think it's absolutely beautiful. And it reminds us of green, beautiful days to come, right? Because it doesn't look quite that beautiful and bright today.
No, it isn't.
But it's a great shot. So thank you for sharing it with us. It's really beautiful.
No problem.
So you just mentioned your high school. So you are a graduate of Taconic High School. Why don't you share with me a little bit about your experience at Taconic High School?
Yes. Yeah, so I was a 2022 graduate of Taconic High School. I was actually class valedictorian, and I had a great time at Taconic. I was very involved in pretty much everything, it felt like. And my first couple years, there was a few clubs, then COVID hit. But even during COVID, I was excelling academically. I was involved in many activities. I created the Taconic Student Voice Club to get student voice to school administration, as Taconic never really had a student government per se. Mm-hmm. So that was my way of getting a student government at Taconic. I was involved in theater. I did the senior video project, where we did an end of year video for our senior year. So I was always at like events, recording, taking photos. I think in my senior year, you could see me running around the building once or twice a day. And I enjoyed my time at Taconic, and I really enjoyed it.
So why did you end up getting involved in government, even there at Taconic? It sounds like you got involved really quickly.
I guess I always had an interest in government and politics.
Okay.
Originally, it was back in sixth grade. That was 2016 with the 2016 election. So there was a lot of interest in that. So that got me in a little bit. But I always felt like there's a need and an interest in helping out my community. And I think ninth grade, I was on our principal advisory committee, which met a few times during a ninth grade year. I always just wanted to help people and improve my school environment. And so I got more involved as I was at Taconic. Taconic Student Voice Club, being a student rep on the school committee. And even after Taconic, as being now a member of the school committee, I continue to stay involved.
No, it's really amazing when you speak, because you obviously, for a young person, you built an incredible resume at high school.
Yes, it's a 2-page long resume, and I still doesn't cover everything.
Right, and that's pretty amazing. You don't see that a real lot. So you're to be commended for that. But what's really interesting about your years in high school is you are a COVID graduate. So you went through high school during COVID. How did that affect you, do you think?
I think COVID affected students in a lot of different ways. Some students really struggled, and it was an unfortunate time for a lot of students. I, being the one that was really computer literate, I always had an interest in computers. I really thrived during that time. I've always been in front of my computer probably since late elementary school or early middle school. I've always had an interest in computers. So I've been used to like virtual environments, learning virtually. So I thrived on that. And with the extra time COVID gave, that allowed me more time to get involved in extracurriculars or watching school meetings, doing dual enrollment at BCC and MCLA,
Oh,
taking
yes.
classes for college credit for free. I got 32 credits by the end of my senior year, which was amazing. And I think there was just a lot of opportunities that came out of COVID that really helped to me for me to excel. And I think if the pandemic never happened, which I think there'd be still a lot of good things, but I think a lot where I am right now, I wouldn't be here where I am right now without the opportunities the pandemic gave.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you say that because we always hear about the difficulties, and there were a lot with COVID, but to also hear that there's some good that came out of sort of that period of virtual learning, that there were some benefits to it as well. How do you feel about virtual learning in our high schools going forward?
I think it's a balancing act. I think there is, I personally think in-person instruction is better for most students. Being in the room with the teacher learning is the best way to learn. Adding online components is good as we move more and more to an increasingly online world. But there also could be some students who are like, I think I need more of an online instruction, a more flexible instruction path. And so we need to figure out a way to accommodate that. I know the district used to have the Pitt Public Virtual Academy. Unfortunately, the district decided to move away from that to still online programs, but some in-person components, which I think is a good start. I was a proponent of this a few years back with Virtual Academy. I'd love to see at some point a countywide virtual academy so that we can keep the students within the county, but also still have the virtual programs. I know there's the two Commonwealth virtual schools, and there's a third one on the way, if I believe. But having one just for Berkshire County, I think would serve our students really well and keep the money within the county.
I think so too. And wouldn't it also allow students to take classes with other teachers that they would not be exposed to, or other school programming?
Yeah, I was on a committee a few years back to actually look at shared resources between different schools, with the Berkshire at the time was the now it's Berk 12. To look at seeing if, like, say, like a Deconics could take a class at PHS or at Monument Mountain or vice versa. And I think having this virtual CAD, this countywide virtual academy, or even just individual schools offering courses that other students could join in virtually would help just increase the quality of learning in this county.
I think so too. Do you think there's any, what would you think would be the reasonable pushback to that idea? Have you heard any?
I think it's just figuring out how it works in the law. There's certain laws that regulate how virtual schools work there, and just figuring out the regulations with the Department of Education here in the state. And then there would be a cost, but I think spreading out between the counties would help to reduce the cost per district. So it's not just Pittsfield putting all the money in, or just like North Adams or any other districts. It'd be somewhat evenly spread out.
Yeah, I think, I tell you the truth, I think that's going to be the wave of the future, quite frankly. I mean, I do agree that some people like myself, I don't do well in classes virtually. I have several professional licenses where all my CEUs are online, and I can do them, but I find that my attention span sort of varies doing it that way. So I'm better in person, and maybe because that's been traditionally been my educational path. But I think young people coming up through the system are so used to everything being virtual that it may be the way of the future, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. For some students probably want the in-person instruction. I know a couple of my friends, even they're more of an in-person type of learner, and I can do both.
Well, you mentioned your experience as a student rep at school and the student rep voting rights. I find that really fascinating. I know when I was in school, because I'm dating myself now, but we had student government, but it was really more, I mean, for lack of, I guess for complete transparency, it was more of a popularity contest. You know, the more popular kids got to be president and vice president, and it was all about the yearbook of the prom. Like, that was kind of what our government, our student government was. How do you see student government change, being different in our schools, and why is that so important?
So that was actually a conversation we had when I was a part of the Massachusetts Association of Student Representatives, which I actually helped found with a few other student reps, actually a bunch of student reps across the state back in 2022 now, is how do we make sure our student governments, A, serve the student body, B, don't turn into that popularity contest, because it's common, not just it still is. I think I've heard the experiences that some it's still a popularity contest. So how do we do that And three, how do we get our student governments to focus on district issues, school issues, improving the school rather than moving away from the fundraiser event model? And so I think student governments have a really strong role in helping students have a say in how their school is run. And not just that, but also teaching them how to be a civically engaged member of our society. We're now with the political environment as it is, and that our even our local races are dwindling down, and people who are running for it. Pittsfield School Committee was uncontested. That hasn't really happened except in 2017, I believed.
That's
But
right.
if you go into the hill towns, there's uncontested seats. There's uncontested seats. There's sometimes vacant seats on the ballot. And this is not just Berkshire County. I read that Newton School Committee was unopposed last year. So we need more people involved in our local governments. And I think getting proper student governments in our high schools is one way to show these students how to be involved, why you should be involved, and letting it be a stepping stone to get them into politics. And that's also why I'm a proponent of student representative voting rights. Under Massachusetts General Law, Chapter 71, Section 38M, which I have remembered for the past 2 years, each school committee is required to have at least one student rep at the seat. Non-voting member of the school committee, but has same responsibilities as all the other school committee members, though cannot attend executive session, which is mainly where negotiations happen. And then there's a student advisory committee, but the law has been kind of, it's outdated. The model doesn't really work well. A lot of districts in the Commonwealth don't follow it. Some of them follow it. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them don't follow the exact wording, but follow the spirit of the law because there's some weird restrictions. Pittsfield has always followed it mostly, I think, but instead of having just a one student rep, they usually have like five student reps. But I think one of the big things that the Massachusetts Association of Student Reps has and has tried to do is push for student rep voting rights so these students not only just have a voice at the table, but they actually have a vote at the table and are able to make their position clear to the school committee, and so they could vote on different topics. And this is not a new thing. Maryland, their school boards down there, they have student reps that vote.
That's
And
so
so
fascinating.
we tried to get a bill into the state legislature. Actually, our state rep, Trisha Farley Bouvier, was the lead sponsor. I was one of the ones who got her on it. I told her the idea. She loved it. And she has tried to push for it. Unfortunately, the bill got sent to study this legislative term, but we're hoping to bring it up in future terms.
What do you think the resistance would be to that? Because for me, as an outsider looking in, I think having young minds and young voices, because you're experiencing what is being regulated by the student, what's being decided by the school committee. So if you're experiencing it and living it as a student, I can't see why you couldn't have a vote about what happens. What do you think the big issue might be for folks that are maybe not on board?
So there's already been some pushback from the executive director of the Massachusetts Association of School Committees, and it mainly boils down to it could lead to a slippery slope where Parent Teacher Association might want a representative on there, the Special Ed Parent Advisory Committee might want a rep on there, and eventually maybe even the Teachers Union might want a rep on there. But I think what separates those groups from students is students can't vote. Students can't run for office. And I'm still on the fence of, I think voting at 16 years old is something we should explore, but running for actual public office at 16, even as an advocate for young people like myself, I don't think it's the best way to go. That's why I like the student rep voting rights idea better. And so these students can't vote. These students can't run for office. Parents in the district, if they reside within the city, can run for office. We actually have a parent on the school committee right now, Diana Belair. Teachers by law can't be on the school committee, but they also have a union advocating for them. So having a student rep on the table will fill the gap that the student's voice, so that students can have a voice at the table that is missing because they can't run for office.
Yeah, I think it's really a fascinating concept. I think it needs a little bit more exploring.
Yes.
But the concept, I'm completely 100% behind the concept. I would need a little bit more information to see if, you know, there's sometimes there's always that thing we didn't think about that could happen. But I think the purpose of it and what you're trying to accomplish with it, I think is should be supported. I truly do. So we just have to kind of wait and see, huh, to see what happens.
Yes, even the bill that was filed in the state legislature, there's actually two bills filed. One of them, the Student Rep Association didn't even know about. It was filed by some Boston representatives. There was still some tweaking of the language that needed to be done, and there's still some things we put. The bill had two student representatives so that if a school committee had odd number of members, it would still have an odd number of members after. And so there's, and even I think the Student Rep Association is going to look into that again and hopefully file the bill again for the next legislative term. But I think the student reps, there's a good momentum going to try to get this in law.
I think this is one of the reasons why I'm so incredibly grateful that you're sitting on the school committee, because I don't believe that this particular issue would be getting sort of the play it's getting and the consideration it's giving in Pittsfield if you weren't sitting there advocating for it. You know, I think your experience as a student really makes a difference, is making a difference in the conversations that are occurring on the school committee.
Definitely. And I think being that proponent now actually as a school committee member actually gives a little bit more weight to it because now it's not student reps versus school committee members, it's school committee members and student reps working together.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting. Everyone, I hope you're enjoying listening to the show. We are speaking to William Garrity Jr. He's a member of our school committee. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I'm the host here this morning of Morning Drive. You're listening to us at WTBR 89.7 FM on Pittsfield Community Radio. You may also be watching us on Pittsfield Community TV on PCTV. So we've been talking about kind of a lot of stuff already. We've covered quite a bit. One of the things I want to ask you about, though, and I've been dying to have this conversation with you, is being a young person, what was your experience running for school committee?
So it was very interesting. I after being after not being a student representative anymore, and when I graduated from Taconic, I was always like, I kind of want to run for school committee. I was a student at Berkshire Community College, so that helps. I'm still a resident. I was still a resident at Pittsfield, so that helps. And I was like, I just want to be more involved. And so I was flipping back and forth, and I decided that around the time the papers came out, I'm going to pull my papers and run. And so I went to City Hall the Tuesday morning. They had papers available. I signed my name, got the papers, brought it home, and I posted on all my social media accounts, "Hey, I'm running for school committee." Within about an hour, I got an email from the Berkshire Eagle wanting to do an interview. And that same
Wow.
afternoon, I did an interview, and I was like, "Wow, I'm getting interviewed already." And so I think that was the moment I realized I'm doing something really big and being pretty much, I think, the youngest person who's ever run for office in the city and
Think
got
so?
elected for office in the city is something that I'm very proud of. And I kind of with our race being six people running for six seats with the focus on a hotly contested mayor's race and a city council race and various ward races, the school committee race didn't really get as much attention as it deserved, especially with the issues the district facing. And I kind of wish we had more opportunity for debates and for discussions publicly about our views. And so that I felt like it was not as exactly as I thought it would be, but also it was good experience talking to people camp while campaigning, doing lawn signs, my bright orange lawn signs, you can see them everywhere. And just and meeting so many great people on the campaign trail. I'll be always fortunate for and grateful for all the help and support people have given me. There was some pushback. There was a city council petition filed to amend the charter to make it so you had to be 30 years old to run for school committee. And I had a lot of people come out, and I it would have never happened. The city council would have never let it happen. And it would have taken years because it's changing the charter, but it was still something that I got some people to come and speak at open mic to say, we don't want this. And thankfully that petition got filed. And that was probably the only major pushback on the trail. But I think a lot of people, even our older population, were so excited to see a younger person run. And I think it's great to have the young people experience, because eventually we're going to need more young people are going to need to step up to the plate.
No, you definitely do. I was thrilled to death to see when you were running. How did your parents take it when you came home with those papers? Were they the first ones to sign them?
Yes, they were the first ones to sign them. My brother too, but I think they have always been supportive of me running for this, and still support really supportive, even coming on, bringing constituent complaints to me, talking about what they feel like. It's always having good discussions with them about what the school committee is currently doing, what's their district currently facing, what's our future looking like, what have we done. And so I think I'm very grateful for their support.
I can tell you one thing I absolutely loved was running for office. I loved campaigning. I think there is such an experience of being out in the community talking to people. One of my races actually was not contested, but you still go out, you still campaign, even if you're not contested, because you still want to have those conversations. But the school committee historically has never really had the light shined on it on their campaigns as they should have. That's always been sort of an issue as a citizen. I was concerned about, because really what happens in our school system is incredibly important for the health of our entire community.
Yeah, it's I think of even just being an observer before I ran, the school committee never got as much attention as it really needed. And it has a very important role in our community. It's a part of our legislative and executive branches. It oversees our whole the school department. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize that. They think the buck stops at the superintendent or the city council, so the mayor has control. But ultimately, it's a school committee that has oversight over the school department.
I sometimes have thought, honestly and truly, even sitting as a sitting city councilor, that the school committee really has an incredibly powerful role in the health and well-being of our community and our young students, and even the families that are affected by the decisions that are made there. So it's a very important role in our community. And I'm hoping going forward that we have more people running, more views, more young people like yourself, and just really making the school committee races and service there be robust, because I think it's incredibly important.
Indeed, and I'm hopeful for the next election that we have more people running so we can have more ideas discussed and more attention, especially not being a mayor election year. Hopefully there'll be more attention brought on the school committee.
Those are rough years, those years when there's no mayoral race. Those are rough. Those are rougher
Yes.
campaigning for sure. Well, congratulations on your run.
Thank you.
This conversation already has proven why you are supposed to be on that school committee, because you're already making an incredible difference with the point of view that you're bringing forward. So how has your experience so far been on the school committee? How was it that first time you sat in that chair?
Yeah, that was it was an interesting experience. Unfortunately, I was a bit ill around that time. The cold was spreading around the family, and so I eventually got it on me. So I still that's why I was wearing a mask at the meeting, is to limit the spread of my germs. But I think it was like being on the other side, instead of sitting at the small table that the students were at, or just watching on PCTV or being in the audience. It was different for sure. It was learning curve, and being elected clerk that night was an honor and a privilege. I somewhat expected it to happen, but also somewhat didn't. I was st still sort of a new member. And so luckily, inside knowledge, we actually have a script to follow. All the mainly the clerk's role is to say the motions, make the motions, what we're about to do, and various other just saying things. And luckily we have a script to follow, because otherwise some people lost. But I still think I could figure it out. But it is an honor, and I think that first meeting was pretty good, and the next couple meetings were also good, just being able to discuss issues at the table, being able to make my first votes. It was just so impactful.
What was your first vote? Do you remember?
It probably was to elect William Cameron as chair of our school committee. That was our first vote taken as a new school committee.
Yeah, that's true. So you are now the clerk. You must have been a little surprised. I mean, you're new coming in. I mean, that's a big honor. It really is a big honor.
It is. And I was a little bit, I remember nominating Sarah Hathaway originally, and then she was like, and then she just declined it and instead nominated me, and I accepted the nomination, and now I'm Clark.
It's pretty awesome. So You're probably the perfect person for it. And I have to commend you on your social media outreach that you're doing. So when I was a city councilor, that was a big thing for me. I think you need to do outreach. You need to be on social media. You need to be doing meetings to keep talking to your constituents. But your social media outreach has been extensive and impressive. So why don't you let folks know a little bit about what you're doing?
Yes. So basically, a lot of it's mainly on Facebook right now, but I also try to use Instagram and a little bit of Twitter slash X, whatever it's called nowadays. I have a personal, I have a school committee page, William Garrity, Pinton School Committee. That's where I post all district updates. I do a weekly newsletter that anyone can sign up. You can check it right on the Facebook page, or I go through either our upcoming school committee meetings. What happened at our last school committee meeting, or any other educational updates from the week. And it's weekly, it comes Monday evening. And I post some portions of it on my Facebook page. I also do notices on the Facebook page for when we have upcoming meetings and information about the agenda. I share the packet out with our information about the meeting. And I just want to make sure that our constituents know, and especially people that are really on social media know what's going on in the school committee. I'm modeling after councillor and now current city council president Pete White, his social media outreach. I'm trying to model it after that so that, because I think his model is really working really well. So now I'm trying to adapt it for the school committee.
No, I think it's incredibly important because you're reaching a whole range of people, quite frankly. I'm grateful for it every time I see it. So thank you so much. It allows me to stay in touch with what's going on. And I think for even young people that are on social media, maybe you're going to be able to engage more young people because you're reaching out in the very venue that they're at, where they are. Have you found that you're getting more young constituents that are talking to you?
I think there's a lot more young constituents that are seeing what I post. Right now, I think maybe it's just because I'm a new member just starting, and there isn't a whole lot that's been thrown at us. It's been, I don't want to say the Q word, quiet right now, but I think as soon as we go to budget season, the posts start coming out about budgeting and some of the more important tasks. I'll get more constituent feedback and hopefully more young people feedback from these social media posts on how we should go with our budget, what's our major topics ahead, or what should we do about our new school building and district restructuring.
Yeah. So before we go to break, because we're getting to the top of the hour, how can folks get your newsletter? Because it really is really interesting.
Yes. So you can check out my school committee page on Facebook, William Garrity, Pitchett School Committee. The first pinned post is a link to sign up for my newsletter. That's the main way you can access it.
And people, if they don't do that, is there a way they can email you and have you send it to them?
Yes. So if you email me at wgarrity@pittsfield.net, I'll be able to get back to you as soon as I can with the link to sign up for newsletter, or I can add you in to the email list manually.
I have to tell you, if you're out there listening right now, I would strongly suggest you do this. Whether or not you have students in the school system is incredibly important as citizens that we are following what is happening at the school committee and the issues going forward. So, William, thank you so much because this really hasn't been something that's been afforded to the constituents of Pittsfield. They really haven't had this opportunity before to get these updates in this newsletter in a language that people can understand. I mean, you break it down to where people can really understand what's happening.
Yes, I try to make it digestible because sometimes the school committee stuff can get complicated. There's lots of laws and regulations that I try to put simple, and I'm used to doing this. When I was at the Conic, I did a weekly newsletter for our students, which also had school committee updates. So I'm used to doing these weekly updates, and I'm also happy to see some of our city councilors actually do their no own newsletters as well. And
Yes.
so I think this is a great way. I even have people outside of Pittsfield subscribe to it, which is great.
Well, no, it really is. You're leading by example. Everyone, we're at the top of the hour. You're listening to WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. You may also be watching us on PCTV, Pittsfield Community Television. I'll be right back in just a moment. We're just going to have a few messages from our underwriters. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Support for closed captioning on PCTV is brought to you by the Feigenbaum Foundation, with additional support from the Pittsfield Commission on Disabilities.
This is Kevin Cahill from the Sunday Sounds of Ireland show, which you can listen to every Sunday on WTBR 89.7 at 10 a.m. You will hear the jigs, you will hear the reels, the fiddles, the bowrons, and the bagpipes, Paddy Riley, the Wolf Tones, the Chieftains, and even some cranberries. So listen to the Sunday Sounds of Ireland every Sunday at 10 a.m. here at WTBR 89.7.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And I'm back. Thank you so much for joining me. If you're just joining, you're listening to Morning Drive right here at WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I'm the host this morning for Morning Drive. We've just had a great half of the show already. I'm talking to William Garrity Jr., who is serving on our school committee. It's been an incredible conversation. If you didn't catch it, you're just joining us, make sure you get to pittsfieldtv.org. Look up Morning Drive. You can catch the entire show and other Morning Drive shows as well. So, William, it's been a great conversation so far, but I want to talk about some of the immediate issues that are coming before the school committee, because it's pretty busy. It's a little quiet, but it's going to get busier. One of the biggest issues, of course, is the end of the ESSER, or the COVID grant funds. Do you want to share with our listeners what that is?
Yes. So since COVID, the federal government passed various laws to give funding to not only the city governments, but also to our school governments, school districts. Mm-hmm. So most people have heard the ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act funds, but there was also ESSER, which I don't remember the acronym off the top of my head, but it was like elementary and secondary education.
Yeah.
Emergency response funds, something like that. And so there was three different ESSERs. There was ESSER one that was mainly for addressing immediate COVID impacts. And I think that was sort of the same for ESSER two. Mm-hmm. ESSER three, there was still funding for addressing COVID issues with providing masks and health and safety equipment, but also for addressing the impacts of the pandemic. So Pittsfield has used the funds in various ways, from funding the virtual academy to improvements to school HVAC systems, but also has used it for, I think, the two main things that I'm really passionate about. It's more school adjustment counselors for our schools to address the mental health impacts, and also early literacy coaches so we can improve our literacy rates in our elementary schools, and so our students can know how to read. So unfortunately, the grants have to be spent by September 30th. But for all intents and purposes, it's the end of our fiscal year. Fiscal years run from July 1st to June 30th. Mm-hmm. And so we need to figure out what we need to do with that, because I believe we need more school adjustment counselors. Even the school adjustment counselors provided by the ESSER funding, I think we need more of it. The Conic, when I was there in my senior year, we had 3.5 school adjustment counselors. Even I felt that was inadequate at times. So I think we need to look at that. I know that's been discussed even during COVID. And so luckily, with the Student Opportunity Act that was passed in, I believe, 2018, 2019, that gave a lot more funding to Pittsfield Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And so for the past few fiscal years, we've been approaching, I'm pulling up the numbers right now, over $1 million increase in Chapter 78, which is the state funding for our schools, so that the city is not bearing all the cost of education, because it would be very prohibitive. So in FY22, for instance, we had almost a $1.5 million increase in Chapter 70. FY23 was like $4.5 million. And in FY24, our current fiscal year, we had about $6.5 million. But unfortunately, we learned, based on the governor's House 2 budget, which is the Governor Healey's budget she brought to the state legislature, Pittsfield's increase would only be $649,000. And I think a lot of school committee members were kind of shocked by that number being passed out. And this is not just a Pittsfield issue. There's been other districts that have realized just how little it is. And there's two reasons why this is the case. One is the inflation rate, which I will admit I'm not an expert on Chapter 70. It is a very complicated formula that I'm still learning. And as we get into budget season, we'll begin learning more about it. But it's calculated inflation, but the inflation rate is lower this year compared to prior years. That's one factor. The second factor, which I'm starting to learn, is the low-income student count has decreased across the state. Oh. That's partially due to some of the pandemic benefits. I think one of the ones mainly talked about online in the Massachusetts education sphere is the students that are no longer on MassHealth.
Oh, that's right.
Due to the enrollment, being removed from enrollment due to the pandemic restrictions being removed. So Pittsfield used to be in group 11 for low-income students. So the higher number of low-income students you have, the higher group number that, which also means more funding. We've learned we were down to group 10, but we were off by like only a handful of students. To be in group 11, you'd be at 70%. I think it's 70% low-income and a couple other criteria. You'll be at 70%. We're at 69.96%. So it's like so close. So we discussed that at our February 14th school committee meeting, and the district is looking to just double check to make sure that every student that should be accounted for as low income or the other categories is. But also what hurts is that this was based off the October 1/October 2 enrollment report that is sent to the state. After that report, we had 80 more students enroll in the Pittsfield Public Schools.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that could have had impacted us, but unfortunately, it doesn't count for this. And so I'm hopeful that the Massachusetts Association of School Committees and other school committees across the state will advocate to our state legislators for more funding, because this is, I think someone out, one of the former school committees out in Worcester, and one of the has said that no district budget is increasing by 1.35%, which is the inflation rate. Exactly. No school budget is going to increase like that. Yeah. And I think on top of the issue with Chapter 70, I think the city councils and what I feel is an ill-advised vote for a level, close to level funded budget, that makes things even harder, because level funded means cuts.
Yeah.
That's because costs always go up. You can't level fund a budget and expect to have services. And I'm hopeful that that the mayor and the city council work out some way. I think the close to language is kind of too vague. I kind of wish they used level service, as that would be a different subject. But I think the council made an ill-advised vote. And I think some of them did not realize how much consequence having a level funded budget would be when they voted. But I think we need to make sure we clearly articulate what we need to do for the district, but also ask for more state funding.
I agree. I think sometimes when we get into the language of level funded, it just plays well, quite frankly. It plays well politically.
Yes.
It does.
And I think that's kind of the reason why the city council voted for it. And I think it was right after the election. That's when the tax bills came out. And so I think the city council decided to take an early stand, but I think the city council didn't realize what the state of the city finances would be at the time. The state didn't have its budget. The state didn't release any of that information. And so they didn't have the information at hand. So they were trying to project what the finances of the city would look like down the head. And we've been, frankly, in a really good time financial wise with the Chapter 78 increases. And now with this relatively small increase we're getting from the state, I don't think any of us, any of the city councilors, any school committees would have expected this.
That's true.
And I think it's
an interesting budget season for sure. It'll be your first budget season. Welcome to it. It is a crazy time. You do a lot of reading. I just hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents, lots of numbers. And you know, it's a big responsibility.
Yes.
You know, I never took it lightly. It's a huge responsibility.
Yes.
And that's where real people start to come out of the woodwork with opinions. And a lot of feedback. Welcome to your first season. I can't wait to hear all about it. I'll have you back as you're going through it.
Yes. And at time of recording, our Wednesday school committee meeting is our budget workshop. And that officially kicks off our budget season. Our budget will be released on March 13th at our school committee meeting, regular school committee meeting that night. But we have already been talking about budget. We've been with the Massachusetts Association of School Committees, learning about their side, what they know about the budgeting. And so I think this is going to be a relatively tough budget session, but hopefully we can, with enough advocacy, we can make it less tough.
I hope so as well. So I want to ask you a little bit about the district restructuring. Of course, we're talking about combining Crosby and County and a new elementary school. How are you feeling about all? Because tell you the truth, that conversation has been a long time coming.
Yes.
There has been historically a lot of resistance to district restructuring. It was a big issue when I first ran in 2013. That was 10 years ago. People really didn't want to talk about it. It's a very emotional issue for people. So how are you feeling about it? Since obviously you've been in the school system, you've been the most recent member that's been in the school system. How do you feel about the district restructuring?
I think it's something we do need to look into. I think one of the things actually discussed at the city council meeting where they discussed level funded budget is decreasing the number of our school buildings to reduce cost, or at least allow us to do more with our current funding, because we've had declining enrollment, but at the same time having the same number of buildings. Mm-hmm. And so that discussion we need to have. And I think part of it too is that we have two school buildings, County and Morningside, that are open classroom. Mm-hmm. I never went to County and Morningside, but the idea as a person on the autism spectrum and having sensory issues sounds like very inadequate for an educational environment to have barely any walls and having sounds. And so we need to look at those buildings and hopefully move away from the open concept classroom design of the 70s, which I don't really understand how the 70 designers thought it was a good idea in the first place, but that's the 70s. And so I think that's why I'm really interested in the school restructuring study. There's looking at grade span alignment changes. There's a couple ideas floating out there, and I'm still learning more about it. And but I think being at the PHS open house, talking to the staff members there and the teachers there, and just knowing in general, we also need to look at PHS.
Absolutely.
We just did a lot of nice things for Deconic, but PHS has a lot of character. Even just being in the building, seeing the artwork painted on the walls and all the student work displayed, it has a really nice character, but there are just some really, really needs physical work. When I was in there, I checked out and I saw areas where there's needs to be work. And that's, the district has a master plan that's been floating around with the School Building Needs Commission and was shared to the school committee. And it has PHS scheduled for looking at it in 2029 and have one of the elementary projects go first. But I would love to see if there's a way to get both projects same time, though I also understand that might not be possible financially for the city, as we would have multiple projects. I know there's Wakona Park, there's talk about the police station. And so as much as I'd love to see PHS happen sooner, I don't think that may or may not be feasible.
No, it's funny, as you're talking, you're bringing up issues that literally were campaign issues when I ran back in 2013 or 2016, it's 2015. It seems really crazy to me, but I understand government having been in it. It moves so slowly. But the conversation about PHS has been one that's been around now for at least a decade, if not more. But I definitely think it needs some attention for sure. It's part of our history, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think I remember I was digging through some old school building needs commission or some old Eagle articles. I think it was one of the former mayors, I think maybe it was Jimmy Roberto, said he hoped by the end of his term he could have PHS on a plan for a project. But this was the early 2000s. And ultimately the decision was to do something with Deconic. But I think PHS needs work. But I don't think it needs a new building. I think it just needs work.
I agree. I think that building would be beautiful to preserve that building. It is part of our history and our legacy. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, quite frankly. The other issue that really intrigues me is the issue of cell phones in the schools. So where are we at with that? I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah. So Cell phones have always been an issue. I think even when I was in school, have always been an issue. I remember the first year I was at the Conic, we had to push for no cell phones. We had no cell phone signs. But I think as we got into the pandemic, more people started getting access to mobile devices, getting used to them. And after it, there was issues with students using their cell phones during class when they're not supposed to. And this is not just a Pittsfield issue, it's a nationwide issue.
It is.
And so a lot of school districts have been, and Pittsfield has, actually pretty much every school district I've seen has in some way tried to crack down cell phone use in class. I think Pittsfield did a great way this year, a great plan for having it so that students could still have their phones with them, or at least in a cell phone pocket caddy in front of the room. But there's been some districts that have used something called Yonder pouches to lock their phones, which basically works like this. You put your phone in your pouch, and then it uses magnets to lock it. Then you have to use a magnet that's either only at the front of the school, or the teacher has, or an administrator has it to unlock the phone, which a lot of districts have been using, but I'm really on the really don't like that idea personally. I think there are a lot of students that, yes, that don't use their cell phones, and the teachers have to keep pestering them to put away their cell phone, put away the cell phone. But there's also students like me that only use the cell phone when either I didn't have work or during lunchtime. And even then, it wasn't for social media. It was for like browsing news articles or browsing school committee minutes or learning more about local politics or just catching up on emails. And I think we need to, and I think Pittsfield tried doing that balancing act of allowing students to still have a little bit of freedom with cell phones and still have the feeling of safety of having their phone with them and accessible, but without going to that. And I know the superintendent published in his February 2nd weekly update that there's been, since the new policy has been implemented as of February 2nd, 4,645 reports of students having a cell phone during an off-hours time, which doesn't mean 4,645 students. It probably is due to multiple violations. So there probably will be a future discussion at some point on what we're going to do next about cell phones if we keep the cell phone rate up. I would love to see I there the cell phone reminder that was put in the superintendent's update says at the end PPS may have to consider lock-in cases for all students. That hasn't come up to the school committee yet, but I expect based on the results of the family survey and the school committee analyzing the results and just the number of infractions, it would be coming up soon. And I think I would like to see if maybe there's a way to make enforcement easier to the policy and maybe giving our teachers a more authority over taking cell phones or saying can't put away cell phones or maybe just moving to caddies for all, just because I know at Reed and Herberg at the middle school level, students are supposed to put their phones in a cell phone pocket in the front of the classroom, maybe extending that to the high school. But as of right now, I'm really not liking the idea of locking phone pouches for all students. It would also be prohibitively expensive.
It would be.
It's 15 to, from my research, it's $15 to $20 per pouch. And you multiply that by every single student in Pittsfield that would need it, it becomes 30. You're talking about five digits.
It's so interesting that we're down to this conversation. If people would just adhere by the rules, we wouldn't be having this conversation. If you're just joining me right now, if you're just joining me right now, you're listening to WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. You're listening to The Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I'm your host. I'm sitting with William Garrity Jr., who is on our school committee. It's been an intriguing, a fun, educational, an inspiring conversation. If you haven't caught the whole thing, please do so by going to pittsfieldtv.org. Go to Morning Drive and you can watch the entire show. We have about 10 or 12 minutes left. So before we get off, I really want to talk to you about some of your aspirations and topics that you would like the school committee to look into. So I know one that's important to you and true to your heart is mental health and social emotional learning. I know that's important to you.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what your beliefs are for that.
So I think the mental health is one of the most important things that factors into students' success in school. Because if a student's not doing mentally well, they're not going to learn. It's simple as that. And so it's always been, mental health services has always been lacking everywhere. And now, especially after the pandemic, getting out of the heat of it, we're starting to see more mental health issues pop up. And I know former school committee member Mark Brazo, he brought a presentation about how many school justice counselors we should have in our schools. And I know with the ESSER funding, we had some school justice counselors brought under that, but grant funds are ending. We need some way to make sure we still have a good level of school adjustment counselors so that students can get the mental health supports they need. And I think that also means state advocacy. I know the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has been looking into it a little bit, but I think it's a larger discussion that needs to happen. And I think even the state isn't putting as much into it as it needs. There's been a focus on chronic absenteeism by the state, but I think underlying the chronic absenteeism problems is actually mental health. We need to support our students with mental health. And that also means ensuring that our social workers have enough resources, that they're getting paid enough, that we're able to track social workers in the field, get them educated. I know BCC has been doing some of that work, but mental health is one of the most important things in ensuring that our students can learn in our school buildings.
No, I happen to agree, but I can tell you, When I was out talking about this issue, there was some pushback. I'm sure you've heard it, which is sort of like, you know, schools are for education and, you know, mental health is sort of a different issue. How do you answer those maybe who are listening this morning who think there isn't as strong as need as you're advocating for?
Students are in school for most of the day, for most of the year. And so school buildings are where students are most seen in the year. And their mental health affects their education. If they're having mental health issues or just not having a good day, they're not going to learn effectively. Mm-hmm. Our schools should be preparing students the best they can. And this is why we need mental health services where students can get them at the time it's best. Sometimes they might not be able to get the services outside of school, either due to their social and economic circumstances or family circumstances, or just they don't have time for it outside of school, but inside of school, they could get the services. So this is why we need to ensure every single student can have adequate mental health services in our schools.
So you mentioned that the school adjustment counselors, at the time that you were in school, you felt the number was sort of not robust enough. How do we figure out what works for each school? And how do you know that wasn't working or wasn't working for you?
So I actually, during my senior year, for various personal reasons, I ended up getting assigned a school adjustment counselor to mm-hmm. deal with some of the issues I was facing. And there were sometimes meetings had to get canceled, or it was hard to get to meet with school adjustment counselors because there's so much need. And at the Conic at the time, we had 3.5 school adjustment counselors. Mm-hmm. And so that made me start thinking maybe we need to have more so that students are not being held up in a waiting queue to get access to a school adjustment counselor. So that was my indicator at the time. And I think there are different student to school adjustment counselor ratios floating online and in research. And I think that's something I'm going to try looking into more. And I think districts should start looking into more. But I think it's going to be a lot of, okay, is looking at each building. It's like, is this enough? Is this not enough? And then if it's not enough, figuring out, do we need to add one or two or more school adjustment counselors, and that'll help alleviate some of the issues.
No, I'm so grateful that you're on the committee, because I think historically this conversation has been about dollars.
Yes.
Totally been about dollars. Quite frankly, it sort of, that's where it settles. I think you bring a different perspective on the issue because you've seen the value of school adjustment counselors. So I think you're going to bring something to the conversation that we have not had before. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that you're there to have that. We have about 5 minutes left. I have to ask you about committee transparency and just how you feel about that issue and school committee policy review. How do you feel about all of
yes.
that?
So last year, the school committee review decided to review its whole entire policy manual. And now it's mm-hmm. on the policy subcommittee. I'll be part of that process moving forward. It's working with the Massachusetts Association of School Committees to review our whole entire policy, which hasn't really gotten a full in-depth review in probably a few decades at this point. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be two major changes to the policy manual. One, we're restructuring our how our policies are organized so it matches lines with most districts and school committees in the state, so that you could cross-reference much easier between different policies, but also to have our whole entire policy manual online. Right now, our policy manual is not on our website. It's one long PDF file if you ask for it, but this MASC services will allow us to have a completely online policy manual, completely searchable, completely accessible. And that's something I'm really excited for. And I think, and then the next thing on transparency is accessibility and availability of agendas and packets. It actually has gotten better this term. I think it was actually our last school meeting on February 14th, mm-hmm. that the agenda and packet are now actually linked on the city, on this agenda that's posted to the city, and the packet information is also on the city's website now. It used to only be on the district website, and I think that may have been because of some the city council is pushing for more of their agendas and packets to be put out and available on the city website. And so my hope is that we could get more of our agendas and packet material up on the city website quicker, so that more of our constituents and more of our community can see what the school committee is actually looking at and what the school committee will be discussing.
No, I think that's incredibly important. I think the school committee, historically, what's been going on there has sort of been, I don't want to say the secret, because that's not true. It's always been accessible. You can go to the meetings. You can see them on PCTV. But I think that the agendas, people have not seen the agendas ahead of time to see what issues they want. And I'm hoping with the more availability and accessibility of the agendas and the packets, you're going to see more people, more of the public showing up to your meetings.
Yes. Hopefully by this outreach, we can get more people at our meetings, or at least more people watching on PCTV, more people discussing it.
Yeah, I'm hoping that happens as well. Transparency in government and what we do, whether you're serving on the city council or the school committee, is incredibly important. Of course, people sometimes just don't pay attention, right? And the packets can be a little daunting, let's be honest.
Yeah, sometimes they can be. I know city council, you have 100-page packets. School committee tends to be less, usually just how our agendas are formatted. And sometimes it's just a presentation, or it's just a couple smaller documents. But I think having the packets out there can really help with our transparency and accessibility to our constituents.
No, I think it'll definitely help. And of course, before we go off, I definitely want you to mention one more time, if you can, please, how people can get your newsletter and how you are reaching out on social media so people can be in touch with you.
So I have my main way of reaching out is through my Pittsfield School Committee Facebook account, William Garrity, Pittsfield School Committee. If you search that up on Facebook, you can find out information about all our upcoming meetings, recaps of our past meetings, and also a link to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I recap our previous school committee meetings, give information about our upcoming meetings. They're sent out usually every Monday evening. More information about education in general. And also, if you don't have Facebook, you can also email me at wgarrity@pittsfield.net, wgarrity@pittsfield.net, and I will be able to add you to the email list.
I think it's a great service that you're doing. I really do. I think you're the first school committee member, and I could be mistaken, but I think you're the first school committee member who really has adopted what we've seen from some city councilors, including myself, about making sure that we communicate with our constituents between meetings. And I think you might be one of the first ones.
Yeah, it's something that it's unique for Pittsfield. And I know I've seen in other city school committees and other parts of the state have done something similar. And so I want to bring that to Pittsfield to increase our accessibility and information about what the school committee does.
Well, I have to tell you, I did see a comment on your Facebook page. I won't disclose who it was, but one of the members of the committee who said your recap was best, and she was sitting right there at the meeting with you, and she loved your recap.
Yes.
So that was a compliment from your colleague.
Yes. I think even some of the school members really liked the recaps because they could see, and even for me, it's like a good way of saying, okay, what did we discuss at this meeting? And also just a great way on the weekend when I write it up, it's like, okay, what did we discuss? Just digesting the meeting.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to them. William Moore is at the bottom of the hour. It has been such a pleasure having you. Hopefully you'll be back on with me again. Yes. We'll have you again on a regular basis so we can talk about what's happening at the school committee. Everyone, thank you so much for being with me this morning on Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I've been with you for the last hour. Looking forward to talking to you again very shortly. If you do not see the whole show, make sure you go to pittsfieldtv.org and you can see the entire interview with William Garrity Jr. It completed. Thank you so much, everyone. Hope you have a great afternoon. Bye.